So I forgot in the joy of early morning get up and time change to bring my hat with me. I was going to bring my football hat. I've had it since I was 15 or 16 years old, which for some of you, that's not that big of a time. For some of us, that's more of a significant deal. But I can't tell you the countless thousands of hours of work I've put in that hat. Serious. I wear a hat 60, 70% of the time. It's just who I am. I grew up that way, and I love this hat. It got to the point where if I was going to show you the inside of the hat, but it has like an elastic band on the inside of the hat, and I wore it so much that the elastic stretched out and was falling out. So I had my mom sew it back in so it wouldn't fall out. Everything's just falling apart in this hat, but I love this hat. And there are a couple fun stories about this. After I had my driver's license, I was driving in the truck with the windows down, and I turned my head and the wind caught my hat and it just flew out. And there's traffic flying both ways on this road. And I stopped and I kind of did like the Frogger thing where you run across the road to get my hat and then ran back out because this hat means so much to me. I wouldn't have probably felt that way if I would have gotten hit, but it means a lot now to me. And so I could tell you countless stories that involve that hat. But one of my favorite stories that involves these hats, this hat, I gave this hat to my best friend. So he's the one that's out now out in Idaho. But we were on the football team together. This was the hat that we got with the football team. It said Breckenridge Football right on the back of it. And to wear this hat meant that you represented that team that you were a part of, the team that you spent countless hours working to represent and better yourself and better the program and invest blood, sweat, and tears into. To wear that hat to me was this sense of pride. Not this, I'm so cool, but I invested in this. This means something to me because I paid for it. Not just with money, but with time, with effort. This hat meant something. And so he had lost his hat in one of his moves, and we had the same hat. And I had two of these hats, and I wore my nice one out to see him. And before I left, I wrote him this note and I gave him my hat. And to you all, if I gave you this nasty, disgusting, falling apart, grease-ridden, blood-stained hat, the other one wasn't that bad, okay? The one I kept was the one I work in mostly. The other one I wore on good occasions. It was my dress hat, okay? So if I gave you that hat, you'd be like, I'm throwing this away as soon as he walks out the door. But to Nathan, that hat meant so much because he knew the story behind it. It didn't have huge monetary value, but the sacrifice that I made, nobody else would have gotten unless they had gone through it. We're in Mark 14. And Jesus is doing something very uncomfortable again. He's dining with his followers in the house of Simon the leper. He's dining in the house of a leper. Okay, Levitical law, you did not associate with those who had leprosy. You didn't touch them. You didn't spend time with them. You didn't share plates with them. You didn't share clothes with them. You didn't share chairs with them. You didn't spend time with these people. These people had to walk like they lived kind of apart by themselves. They live in their own communities so they could survive a little better. But generally, these were outside of town, these leper colonies. And so Jesus is at the house of Simon the leper. There are three different things that explain this because, like I said, Levitical law, Jews, you just didn't eat with lepers. You didn't hug them. You didn't touch them. You didn't spend that time with them, okay? So it's very unlikely that Jesus was actually, well, not Jesus, his disciples, because Jesus has his followers with them. It's very unlikely that they're eating in and with someone who has active, current leprosy in this passage. But you have three options. So let's say it is the unlikely fact that Jesus is eating with someone who currently and actively has the disease of leprosy. That's one option. Your second option, this happens in Scripture. Somebody would have leprosy like that, and their family, their friends, their children, their cousins, they would take over management of that house. They'd take over these people's property and these people's possessions, and they'd manage them for them. Okay. And your third option, so in your second option, Jesus is eating with friends. And they're describing, okay, well, this is Simon's house, and Simon has leprosy. Or your third option, Simon had leprosy, past tense, okay? Simon had leprosy, no longer had leprosy, and went through like all these ritual purification things. So he had to go through certain amounts of time. He had to make certain sacrifices, had to get inspected by priest. And now Simon no longer had leprosy. So there are your three options. You know this, but I'm going to remind you of this. There was this stigmatism associated in Jewish culture 2,000 years ago that what happened to you was a direct result of how faithful or how sinful you were. So if you had leprosy, that meant you were sinful, your parents were sinful, your family was sinful, and that was God's punishment on you. This is one of the reasons why you have this idea of Jews staying away from those who have leprosy. It's this separation. It's this God's people are called to be set apart and different. And so Jesus is dining at the house of Simon the leper. And no matter what one of the three ways you look at it, he's doing something that is very uncomfortable. Jesus does this a lot, you remember, because the Pharisees come to him and they'll say things like, why are your disciples eating with those people? Why are you spending time with those people, Jesus? Don't you know that who you spend time with reflects on who you are? Sinners spend time with sinners, and faithful people spend time with faithful people. And Jesus, I love his responses. I'm going to read into Scripture here a little bit. Hopefully God doesn't strike me with lightning. But I believe Jesus in those moments is either saying, get away from me, you don't know what you're talking about. Or he's saying, yeah, you're dumb. Or that's probably how I would have responded. Or he's ignoring them. And one of my favorites that he says is, The Son of Man came to save everyone. It is not the sick, or it is the sick who need a doctor, not the healthy. And so Jesus is doing something, like I said, this is very uncomfortable. And Jesus is breaking all these cultural norms. So he's in a disreputable place. Remember, his disciples weren't the most honorable people, position-wise, in that culture. He picked fishermen, tax collectors. These weren't the high of the high. These were the low of the low. So he's in a disreputable place with disreputable people. And in walks this woman. Talked a few weeks ago when I talked about divorce and God's will for our lives in marriage. I talked about the position that women held in Jewish culture 2,000 years ago. This woman walks in. And the passage that we read, or was read to us, says that they were reclining at the table. They had There's a couple of different options, but one of the options was they had these short tables. Okay, they think of like a coffee table for us. Okay, short coffee table. And they would take pillows or blankets, that kind of thing, and they would kind of lump them up around the table, and they would lay towards the table. They either lay on their stomach or on their side. They kind of reclined towards it. Their head is at the table. Their feet are away from the table. And so when this passage is telling us they're reclining at the table, they're not sitting around the table in chairs. They're sitting around the they're laying around the table, and in walks this woman. And she does something really, really uncomfortable. She takes this alabaster jar. So nard perfume was very, very expensive. It was imported from, I don't want to get this wrong. I wrote it down in here, but I'm off my notes, so who really cares? But it was either India or South Arabia. Okay? So it's imported. It is this expensive perfume, and it was in these vials or containers, and you had to seal this so that the scent didn't escape, and it kind of preserved it. Think along the lines of like a pint jar kind of idea. And so in walks this woman. She has this jar of alabaster perfume. Very, very strong stuff. If you have affiliated it today, money-wise, it would be around $50,000. One of the books I read out of said around $50,000. And this woman doesn't just open this jar. You know, you can open it, put a little bit on Jesus, and then close it back up. She breaks it. Breaks the lid off it. You can't seal it back up. You put it in an alabaster jar to preserve it, to keep it safe. This was something that she did that was huge. She brings this very, very expensive gift to Jesus. This gift was most likely a symbol of status for her family. $50,000, think about that. This was like a symbol of status. Her family had worked for this. This was not just hers. Her family had worked for it. This was something that her family would be honored by, give them a sense of status. But also, I like to think that this was also kind of a safety net. I have something worth a lot of money that if we get in bad times, I can sell and I can get by. And so Jesus is at the table, and in walks this woman, and she breaks open the jar so she can't seal it again. And the passage that was read to us, it says that she poured it on Jesus. She didn't just sprinkle it. She gave it all. She's pouring it on Jesus. She's combing it through his hair. And she's doing something really uncomfortable because they're reclining at the table. And so you have to think she's climbing over people to get to Jesus. What are you doing? Get off me. Okay. She's climbing over people to get to Jesus and to his head that is at the table. Do you understand now a little bit more why these disciples and these followers were so upset? They're angry that this woman walks in. It's not the time or place for that. She makes everybody uncomfortable. It is very, very strong smelling stuff. When she breaks this open, it fills the room. Okay? And I'm not going to ruin one of my points later. But she pours it on Jesus. It's all consuming. It's disruptive. It's uncomfortable. And I'd go as far to say that the disciples And the followers sitting around that table would have thought this was a very disrespectful act in that moment. And then you couple that with the idea that it's worth $50,000 American today. This is huge. The disciples are mad. She gave something worth a lot more than my insignificant hat, right? She gave something huge. She gave up her sense of status. She gave up her family's power. She gave up money, but she gave up her safety net. Notice the stark contrast here with the passage that we ended with, Judas. Notice the stark contrast here between Judas and this woman. This woman brings everything before Jesus. Everything. Jesus, here it is. Take it all. She doesn't just give it to Jesus in a way, here's the alabaster jar. Do what you want with it. That would have been huge. That would have been very respectful. Okay. But she worships and honors God in such a way that she cannot get it back. I do this. I don't do this. At moments where I give something to God and I'm like, hey, God, here's my money. It's yours. Well, here's your money, but it's yours. And then God's like, okay, Eric, give what I tell you to. And hey, I want you to give up this thing that you've really been saving for and this thing you really want to do something else that you think is insignificant, but you're giving the money away. And I'm like, hey, God, cool, I'm going to still buy this thing that I want and I saved money for because I was frugal with it and I was intentional with how I did it. But I pull back control. Hey, God, here's my kids. Oh, wait, my kids won't be able to do as much with all their friends and won't be able to do as much in school and won't be able to do as much in athletics because church is a vital importance to me and my family, and honoring God is of a vital importance to me and my family. So that means when raising my kids, I'm going to be sacrificing moments that they could have had if they weren't a Christian. I'm going to be sacrificing those things. So, hey, God, here's my kids. Well, I want my kids to have this, God, so I'm just going to pull them back. You can have them later, but I'm going to pull back. She doesn't do this. She breaks the jar open, and then she pours it on him. There's no going back. Jesus meant everything. And I always want to look for the best in people, but here's Judas. And obviously, Jesus was not number one to him. When the thing he valued more than Jesus was challenged by Jesus, he walked away. Now that just happens to be money for him. He chooses the thing more than Jesus. There are a couple of different interpretations that people try to explain away for this. One of them, Gospel of Judas, there's a reason it's not in our Bible, okay? But there's an idea that Judas had like this secret knowledge going on with Jesus, and that's all wrong. Okay, and then there's another false one that Judas was doing this in order to like push Jesus so that he had to demonstrate he was God. He had to demonstrate that he was, chosen. That one's false too. But like, Judas chooses something that's more important to him than Jesus. And he walks away from Jesus. The account of the alabaster jar is in a couple of different gospels. It's in Matthew 26, Mark 14, like we're reading today, and John 12. And in John 12, this woman is specifically listed as Mary. That's Martha's sister, Lazarus' sister. And if it is Mary, I don't want to affiliate and tell you it is, okay? Go with me. Hypotheticals here. If this is Mary, very well could be, very likely could be, but if it's Mary, this is also most likely the Mary that went to the empty tomb. So Mary anoints Jesus with this perfume and sacrifices everything. And this is why when Jesus says, she has anointed my body, she is preparing my body for burial. I don't know if Mary knew what she was doing in that moment. I like to think she didn't. But God used it in such a powerful way, because this perfume was really strong and they didn't embalm people 2,000 years ago. So going to the tomb 3 days later, so he's crucified on Friday. Saturday is the Sabbath, and you can't do anything with Jewish law with dead bodies besides the bare necessities with dead bodies. You can't do anything on Saturday. And then it's Sunday morning, Easter, and these women are walking to the tomb, and they find it empty, and Mary finds the empty tomb. And this alabaster jar, this nard perfume, is the same potency, the same strength of these spices and perfumes they were taking to put around the body of Jesus. When I was in college, I was a poor married college student, and this was 7 years ago, and my wife and I, Susie, were on our way up to Christmas Day, on our way up to my parents, and we hit a deer with our car. I just praise God that Susie was okay, and our onboard child, Brian, was okay. But we hit this deer at like 60 miles an hour because it jumped out in front of us and no stopping. And weeks earlier, Claudia Miller, many of you will remember Claudia for both happy and funny reasons. I'm just excited to worship with her someday. I'm excited to worship with her someday. She's with Jesus now. But Claudia had come up to me, and she was not that well off at all. She came up to me and gave me a check and said, God told me to give you this. I don't know why, but God told me to give you this. And I'm like this poor college student. I'm like, yeah, I'm not eating ramen tonight. Yes. Okay. And so weeks later, Christmas Day, we hit this deer, and that check covered the deductible for our insurance to pay for, to get our car fixed. Just a few months ago, I got this huge package in the mail, this huge box, and I opened it, and there's a sword in it. And I'm like, what? Okay. But I read the note, and it's from my friend Nathan. And I was the best man in his wedding, and this was like a best man gift. And he gives me this sword. And hold on, there's a story. I know it's awkward, but there's this story. That's just who we are. I am awkward, okay? Everybody, you know this. But in this package is this note. And the note says, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. Thank you for being the best man at my wedding. But more importantly, thank you for always pushing me towards Jesus. And that was the same day that we found out we had our second miscarriage. God was doing something through somebody else that I didn't know I needed until after it had happened. God did something through Mary that she didn't know until after it had happened. God uses you that way too. When God calls you to do something, do it. Don't try and explain it away. Be diligent in seeking out the will of God. I'm not telling you to just, you know, oh, I feel like God's telling me to do this and then just haul off and do it. I'm telling you to diligently seek out the will of God, but when God diligently calls you to do something, do it. You may be being the hands and feet of Jesus to somebody that you'll never know about. So I just want to end this time by praying. I don't know where you're at on the spectrum of Judas to Mary, Judas to this woman. I don't know where you're at on that spectrum. If there's those priorities that are higher than Jesus, or if everything is surrendered to Jesus. But I want to pray with you. And I also, I couldn't walk away without challenging you with the idea that Jesus can use you preemptively to be his hands and feet.